regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, May 28, 2015. First item is to approve the agenda. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Changes? So the agenda is approved. First thing is to invite any member of the public for speaking on non-agenda items. Seeing none from the public.
Maybe we need to approve the minutes first.
Public comment on non-agenda items was number three. You're right. Okay. So, minutes from the May 14, 2015 Planning Commission meeting. Entertain a motion to approve.
So, I assume. Oh, second.
Okay. So, it was moved by Jim, second by Dick. Any changes or amendments? I have a question for staff. It says the meeting was adjourned at 10:12 p.m. Is that correct, or was it later?
That's time, and then we stayed and chatted for a bit.
Are you proud of this thing, or what are you saying?
I didn't want to be blamed for it. Being over
sounds right.
And it was short that their time.
It was a full meeting. We were really working our cup of coffee on that.
Any changes? And all those in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next item is public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no one from the public, we will move on to item number four, which is the land use element deliberation and possible recommendation. I'd like to invite the staff to let us know if there's been any updates or changes since we received our documents.
Okay. So we have, we're passing around page 21, 22, and 24 of the accepted version. And if you want to compare, you could open up what's in your packet to 21 and compare. And Mark and Lynn chime in whenever. But as you'll see on our page 21 that was in your packet, the numbers, we highlighted the changes, and basically on table H.2, the year in your packet has 2009 to 2014 as the third set of years, the one above it, 2001 to 2005. So we're missing a four-year gap there, and the new numbers in highlight reflect that. So very minor changes, insignificant changes. The one that is quite different is in table H.1, residential demolitions. 46 is what we had in the packet, and 19 is our new number. What happened was our permit tech was counting all demolitions, like if it was
chicken coops,
like a remodel.
Yeah, like a remodel or a tenant improvement or a and that makes a lot more sense. So just home demolitions. Five of those were from Bartel's development, just to give you an idea. But
so a demolition is a complete home.
Mm-hmm. For this purpose, yes. So we track things so many different ways that took us a little bit of work together to get these numbers, but these are the best.
So 19 of the 12 are dwelling units, not yes. Just some other structure.
Yes. So that is our that's our only change.
We lost some in the permitted units. From 264 to 252.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had some double counts.
Yeah.
Total
units.
Okay.
You know, the big number that I wasn't a comment on later, but it was the number of units per acre from the late 90s until this last year, we almost doubled. Which we feel it going. I mean, we're really in a really squeezed situation. It's because we are. It's what we're compared to, what we're used to for that.
I think I do feel some of the change, you know, in the culture and some of the different feelings, I guess. So, yeah. Anyway, to page 22.
Yeah, so that's just carryover, the two highlights there at the bottom where that number was 30.
30?
Yeah.
33.
Yeah, now it's 30. So just small changes there based on the number changes from 21.
Yeah.
So that's just the carryover, showing those changes, same on top of page 24.
Right, and just to add to what Jamie was saying, in addition to that, since our last meeting, we've gone through the edits that, that you provided, any grammatical edits that were provided, plus the comments that we compiled between the three of us from the meeting, and hopefully we've addressed most of those. I'm sure you saw some of the changes to some of the comments. So, and we do have some follow-up information that I think will be fleshed out as we go through the questions, and if not, we can make sure we get it all worked through.
Okay. So I'd like to ask the commission, if you've had a chance to review the document, if you got specific points that you want to address. My goal tonight is not to review the entire document again, but areas that you think are not adequately addressed, or if there are new concerns that have arose since our last meeting. So,
Mr. Chair, I raise my hand. I've got margin notes that say things like very good, excellent. I can't find anything negative to say whatsoever. As far as I try it. No, this was actually fun reading because I wasn't reading it to, wasn't reading to find the pit. I was reading it. I was enjoying it because things were, I didn't find any, that stuff which you said before. It's all, I thought it shows good flows. Your facts from one page are the same as the facts the other page. It doesn't, you're not bouncing around. It's great. A bit of, there's one thing on page 5, the last paragraph, where you're talking about the importance of the development of Exit 31. And I thought that since it was a more of a dialogue, that maybe an important element wasn't mentioned, and that was that the historical downtown was basically shut down at that point in time. And that Exit 31, when it was developed, I think it was Joan Simpson. I was asking her, the B&O on 31 was 83% of the city's take. I mean, the town was broke, just like Snoqualmie was. They weren't even paying each other over there. They were broke, and this town was looking even more broke. When that center went in down there, it contributed 83% for an extended period of time. And that might be a fact that might be important to mention in terms of how Exit 31 actually saved the town. I think it did financially.
You're speaking of the outlet mall, right?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Ryan, I appreciate that point. And I guess my challenge to you is, do you feel that we have provided enough business zones so that if we had something change at Exit 31, can the city still provide that same vitality and income, or share that helps support itself? So that's what I want to keep ourselves asking as we work our way through these documents. Like, those are great points that was so vital to our town. Do we ensure that we have that same stability moving forward?
You know, it's difficult when a town has a boom. It's like, can we ever have another Microsoft in Bellevue? You know, I don't think we ever will. It's one of those, it's the right time, right kind of item to spark a flame that became a roaring fire. I don't know if we'll ever have that again. I think we have to go down a lot to get to reignite. I don't think you're going to do that this time. We've got a lot of stop gaps to help our economy survive another problem like that. But I do think we have, to answer your question, I think we do have the zoning set up in the right places, with the right amount of land available. and I think that we'll become recognized for that availability. I think within the next 5 years, we'll be now.
Thank you. Elizabeth, did you want to make a comment?
It was just a second. The consistency. I'm not so much concerned about do we have somewhere we can have a boom. Are we planning for consistency so that we don't have the boom bust situation? And I think that right now we are. I was actually very surprised looking at some of the charts that we're not seeing any projects really in the employment park where we zone for commercial usage.
There are a few interest and pre-applications, and like you said, I think
they're just not,
as far along as
because it when you look at the numbers, it looks that we're so heavily weighted toward residential, single family residential construction at that, that we don't have a balance of growth occurring.
So I hear your point, and I'll ask the staff. Prior to I was on the Planning Commission, there was an overlay that was passed for the EP1 and EP2 zones. I don't know if it's possible if we could take a look at that as a Planning Commission agenda item, see if it is a limiter to somebody actually developing that land and how we can work to bring business to the valley.
I'm worried that we don't have enough apartment stock on that, only 40 some acres for high density res, and I think that we need to find a way to retain our young people who will stay here and work in town instead of driving to Sequoia and come back here to work. And that's when they leave, they're not coming back. And I think we need to find ways to give them affordable housing.
So, question maybe even for Mark. Do we know what our high-density residential was prior to these zoning changes? Do we have any way to compare how much we had to where we are now in acres or anything like that?
I know that the previous comp plan had charts in it by zoning category. That was one of the tables I updated.
Yeah.
I didn't have the old table with me.
I meant to bring it last time, too, and I forgot the existing. I think... with this update, we've added quite a bit from the cottage residential going.
Yes, but we also shifted some, so it's hard to, in my mind, quantify whether it's gained or a net.
I was looking at one item. The entire category is 107 acres. HDR city, HD with restrictions. It looks like we have 107 acres total. Does that pencil out to like 1,000 residents?
That's units, housing capacity in units.
Ooh.
So that's a big difference.
It says vacant land.
Yeah, right above it, housing capacity units. And so the 45 HDR with density restriction is talking about the across the freeway near Forester Woods. So that means the remainder, 62 units.
We changed a big section to HDR.
Mm-hmm. I do have the previous land use chapter pulled up right now that has the acres available and for the acres zoned. If you want to look at some of the changes, that's compared to the table on page 9. And let me get there. Would you like me to read through all of them, or just look at the high density?
It's like total acreage.
I can see. Mm-hmm. Like about 85.
So, let's see. We didn't have constrained low density, so that one doesn't go straight across. But let's see. We actually have fewer acres for cottage residential now. We used to have 63. We have 26 with the proposed zoning changes. Mm-hmm. High density residential, we had 52, and we now have 85. So the significant increase there. The downtown commercial, there's 58 now in downtown commercial.
In terms of high density, is that eight residents per acre? Eight units per acre?
It's based on the assumes 12 per acre. Yeah.
Assumed is 12, but by the Vulcan dimension, or not Vulcan dimension, but by the tables, you can probably do 16 if you can squeeze everything with you know, your site improvements. Mathematically.
You have to have 2,000 square feet per dwelling unit.
And then, yeah, I guess you have to also consider downtown commercial. That can accommodate apartments as well.
Yeah.
So can neighborhood business. So can Employment Park 1.
And let's see, neighborhood business was 146, now it's 156, so that's an increase. Employment Park 1 was 367, now it's 335. So a bit of a decrease there.
That's from the...
So we're looking at 15,000 population in when this plan comes to fruition 20 years from now, 25 years from now, is that right?
Correct.
We're way ahead of that right now. I get it.
It's not so much a time frame. That's just looking at if a full build-out were to occur for the highest and best use, the full build-out. So it's not so much projecting at what rate it'll happen.
I look at it like it's here's what the maximum population growth could be. Are we going to get there? We don't have that crystal ball. But we do know how many permits are in the pipeline and what our target is, and we know that we're going to meet that very quickly. Yeah. So that puts us on a path towards the higher end, not a median, I think. That helps me in thinking about water, sewer, power, streets, traffic movement, all that kind of stuff. So that's where I find that ultimate number helpful, is to relate it back to how do you think about that movement throughout the city.
So those numbers came originally from GMA basically saying to county and city, U.S., say, okay, come up with some numbers and throw them back at us. That's how that whole number, the original projections came from us, right?
The targets are given from the county, and the projections are based on our assumptions of highest and best use for each zone and the amount of redevelopment and amount of land we have available.
So follow that to say, if we think we don't have enough designated space for a particular zoning, including high-density apartment-type dwellings. I'm just thinking ahead, saying, okay, well, these numbers include UGA, and that's not in stone, that line, right? So between now and 20-plus years from now, lots of things are going to dance around. So if it were me just picking numbers and saying, okay, well, the thing I'd be worried about, just like you're saying, is let's make sure that we have density allocated now for right now. But, and
Jim,
I'm wondering if we actually do.
But wouldn't you agree that where the UGA is going to, where a city lies in expanding on the UGA, the UGA is really in areas that are not going to be handling HDRs. They're going to be handling smaller residences and things like that.
Yeah, so I'm kind of going with you to say let's make sure we've got enough high density designated space now, so that the developer can come in and say, well, I actually have enough space to work with.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big market driven guy, and I think if there's a space allocated that the density works, then the math will work and somebody will come do it, versus us picking out little pockets here and there that don't really make any sense to the developer.
And this is the exercise you went through with your zoning suggestions, and you did include more high density residential that has vacant developable land.
Yeah.
So I think you have provided.
And our overlays, as you touched on, are quite large in the areas, in the EP1 areas, and they all allow for more residential.
Has anyone come to permits and said, hey, I'd like to have more space to do my project? Is that conversation ever?
We did have somebody else come in adjacent to the Tanner Junction overlay saying they also want to develop residential on their Employment Park 1. We had a pre-application meeting with them, and it hasn't gone any further. But
is that where there's a apartment proposal out there?
The apartments are Tanner Road.
Yep.
Not the one by the river, not where you live, but...
Yep.
Jason Park,
and that's 12 units.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sewer there, yep.
Where's the
They'll have to connect to the sewer.
So the question, I appreciate Lynn reading off those numbers. I feel that this change, we've made an improvement in them. You do feel it's adequate. If we don't have permit activity, you know, I'm not sure we need to do a whole lot more at this time. I thought when I proposed a change, I'm thinking 7-10 years from now, what would we want to have there, and to provide that clear notification of here's how the build out should go. Now, Jim made that proposal for an expanded downtown core, and so it was hard to fit everything in that broad change without thinking about slowly building out. So, you know, it just, I think you balance it. What are your thoughts? Do you agree with the sufficient allocation, or do you think we need to go further?
I feel easy with it now, estimate 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And this is something we can revisit. In a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to
insist. By that I'm saying, Gary, I don't feel panicky about our, well, I feel pretty good about the balance of the zoning issues. Whereas before I didn't.
Elizabeth, anything?
The fact that we don't have any projects. Again, I think it's an ask me in a year. Mm-hmm. And if we see some movement, I do think that we have the whole density versus sprawl thing to deal with. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit more complicated than just how much high density residential we have to process.
At the same time, fulfilling our vision of a rural town.
It's an interesting balance, isn't it?
So, Jim, any thoughts?
I was just going to point out the bottom of page 9, which you seem to be talking about. It's interesting. I just remember read it. It says, newly constructed facilities include, in the last paragraph. The newest of the projects is 2012. The first thing I noticed is the library. And the mm-hmm. new projects are 15 years old. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other piece that I keep thinking about, because we're not like a normal town, not just from our geography and location, but we're the only town probably of any significance along I-90. We've been shut down and out of business for 10 years straight due to a water moratorium. Mm-hmm. Right into the economics of everybody else that did it. So we've got this weird, what are we doing? And any business that comes into town pulls off the freeway. Still today, the guy who's got the money pulls off the freeway and goes, what the hell's going on here? Because the downtown looks like it's struggling. It's not. It's just finally coming to life. But that's the piece that's sleeping. So I believe, like you say, 5 years from now, night and day, it's coming. Provided another economic twist doesn't dance. Anyway, it's cool.
I think we need a big downtown street excavation project like Snoqualmie to look like we're doing something.
I agree with you. Yeah, listen to false... temporary red lights at intersections and that sort of thing. I will take this point one more point.
Yes.
Because I don't know where this would be, but to me, as we get into the downtown, we get into density, the only place an example I can use would be Kirkland. Mm-hmm. When you go into Kirkland, it's crazy with cars and traffic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we need to go anywhere near that, but one of the things they did 20 years ago was along their waterfront corridor, they made the streets more appealing to pedestrians. And one of the ways they did that was you don't have any buildings that are four stories at the curb. Mm-hmm. There's always a one story and then a setback to the second story.
Yeah.
So as we develop Main Street, our Main Street, I'm hoping that that's something that comes up again. I don't know if now's the time.
Would that be in performance or?
Or even economic development.
Mm-hmm. The downtown revitalization is economic development, but we do have performance standards that mandate if a certain amount of the building is facing the street, then it does start to have modulation and setbacks a certain distance. And the mixed-use building that we're working with the developer on at the explosion site is having second-story setbacks. Mm-hmm. So that is something that's provided in the design standards. Yeah.
For us, it's not just the street appeal, but it's the travel through town.
Creating the...
To be able to see the mountains.
Don't create tunnels.
Perhaps both sides.
So well, anyway,
don't create
anyway.
Tunnels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
As long as we're in the discussion, what I think that... I'd like to think about North Bend, downtown North Bend, as being what Issaquah is becoming today. This really is a vibrant, old town neighborhood. And you put just enough in that street to make it really interesting in terms of new shops, new merchandising ways. You're always seeing something different rolling out, and there's enough restaurants and that village theater and all that seems to just work for them. And I think that's our destiny. Our downtown will begin to look like that as we begin to get more occupants in our downtown area that are actually producing something. So I have hope for our downtown area. I think we ought to stay the course on that and not go crazy. I like the idea about the city center being down there and the city hall. And I think it all looks good.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have any other comments? Because you started with the HDR, so I want to give you a chance to go to your next one. Or?
Well, that was the only thing that I had a comment. I'm still making a comment about. I want to make sure that we don't get too far away from a vibrant HDR community, even in the rural community that we're trying to establish. We still, I think we still owe it to ourselves to have housing for particularly young professionals and non-professionals who are making a blue-collar salary to stay in town. We're chasing them out by not having that, I'm pretty sure about that.
For example, the explosion site that Lynn brought up, he's proposing residential above how many units?
32 units.
32 units, right there.
Is that apartments?
Correct,
condo.
Yeah. Apartments, it'll be second and third story apartments.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
So, move on to Lynn. Do you want to go with any changes or questions?
The only thing on page 13, and I think you probably just got this, is in the update to the South Fork residential lane. It still shows the Shamrock Park.
Yeah,
that was small.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I found.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And that marked out, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and a couple. Do you want to make it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the one that changes on there? Mm-hmm.
So a couple things that just, I don't know, if we're out of order, just
no.
Throw something and I'll stop.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get clear in my head. The Growth Management Act is a federal legislation, right? It trickles down to the states. It trickles down to the counties, which trickles down to the cities.
GMA is a state.
Certain counties in the state.
Yeah, but you...
All counties in Washington have to...
I thought that was
depends
a
on
federal
population.
Mandate.
Oh, okay.
No?
No, it's a state.
It's a state.
It's a state.
I guess I'm thinking of every state doing their own thing. But. So, and we're reviewing this every 10 years based on that requirement, right?
Seven years.
So, back to my original thought about the UGA, how is that adjusted? How is the Urban Growth Act adjusted?
That's a really good question. And that actually came up at our last meeting.
I requested that chance to adjust our boundary because I don't think it fits really well. And it seems a bit odd the way it was drawn.
Yeah.
It seems
you want to give that over? So that did come up last time, and we have a better answer for it this time.
Came up, Commissioner Ryan brought up a topic that came up with King County Council, King County Committee, related to the golf course. And so we did some research and inquired with our attorney, you know, what is the change for the UGA? What's the process? So this two-sided does a good job of describing what steps are needed. And it basically starts with the King County Council and the King County Council committee, in this case, evaluated the request and makes a recommendation to the full
King County Council. And then they make a recommendation to the Boundary Review Board. The Boundary Review Board is kind of like a hearing examiner, so they're the final decision maker. But as it says in on the second page, DP 17F, that a city or town adjacent to the area to either be added, this is to be added to a UGA. I would assume the same scenario happens if you're taking away. It's coordinated between King County and the city, and that's required. There needs to be an agreement. So.
So in other words, they can't create a boundary that we don't agree to.
Right, yeah. Or there's an agreement, so there's, you know, some give and take through the process.
Would you say that that agreement happens between King County Council's and our council?
Ultimately the agreement would. It would start, you know, it might start from you guys, from us, from you guys, and work its way up, but...
In this case, it began with a citizen who was getting to Kathy Lambert to expand the UGA from where it was down to the river. And so it sounds like, what I'm hearing you as you're describing this, it can come from just about any direction. It can come from a landowner, it can come from the city, it can come from the county itself. Anybody can jump and propose an expansion of the UGA. It doesn't seem very uniform.
Well, I think...
as an example, you weren't aware of it.
Yeah.
You should have, at least the county should have given you a correspondence saying this is happening. You didn't have that.
Yeah, so their action, as I understand it, was to decide if they were going to take it up to consider or not. You know, so... being as though it is in their jurisdiction, they have the purview to do that. There is a Boundary Review Board public process and a King County public process, and it would go through all of that, and then per the regulations, they would have to involve us. They just didn't yet, or I'm not sure if the mayor was kind of aware of it.
There might have been a meeting with the city administrator, too.
Yeah, there had been some meetings on this property in the past, did they know about that exact council committee action? I'm not sure.
In here, is there a step for, one, adjusting what our urban growth boundary is and where our city limits are? Because I think it would make sense if we're just going to say, here's where we like our city reaches to extend, where we can offer city services, and where we could have a lot more logical line is one statement. Mm-hmm. It's another if somebody like this landowner is petitioning to actually be in the city, mm-hmm. who's in the county. Seems like I don't want to just be in the UGA, I want to be in the city.
Mm-hmm. So, our only obligation is to plan for our UGA as it is now.
Our last few pages on this talks about the annexation process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's very clear, it starts at the city. I don't see how the county could possibly feel like they have first bite on the apple on this. It seems like they get a citizen requesting this, they need to push it down to us because we may not be ready to accept that land for annexation because it requires us to do things that we wouldn't think of doing. It's before the time. We don't have the finances put away to do the infrastructure. So how can the county put pressure on the city to do something like that?
Well, remember, once annexed into the UGA, the city still doesn't have to accept it into their city limits. So the cost of infrastructure and the other associated cost with annexing in the land is still up to the city's consideration for annexing.
And it's borne by the applicant. I mean, you know.
So are there financial considerations when King County basically says, now this is inside our urban growth boundary? I mean, there's no tax change because they're still not in the city yet.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
No change until
So there's no change until they're annexed into the city limits.
So is it true that UGA is strictly about a planning tool?
Yeah.
That's all it does?
For the most part, yep.
And growth management.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the piece that I was leading to, I guess, would be say, you think about King County and their controls. If somebody wants to... somebody has an outside the city limits 2-acre parcel, for example, they probably can't build on it based on King County's regulations. So my thought is, if there are parcels out there that exist and have been existed for a long time, then we as a city should be proactive and say, hey, let's look at this as a new boundary and just go, and you can see it on the map here. You could redraw those lines and say, well, I can see all these sub 2-acre lots. Those ought to be in our UGA because they're not going to be done, not going to be planned with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then we can really see way ahead of time what we should be paying attention to, mm-hmm. where the roads need to be, where the sewer needs to be, how far away from the river,
exactly.
that dance. So mm-hmm. the UGA, to me, should be much bigger so that we can think about 25 years from now.
That's supposed to be useful.
I think this is a good discussion. At this point, I'm going to end it and just make the request to staff that we bring this up after we're done with the comp plan as a chance to discuss adjusting our urban growth boundary. Mm-hmm. And one of the requirements would be is to get an assessment on 2-acre or lower
anything,
parcels.
Anything that it doesn't, that's smaller than permitted by King County. That way somebody can address the future for the property owner mm-hmm. instead of leaving them in limbo.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
Mr. Chair, yeah, yes. I'll pass you guys along just edits that I found. Nothing substantive, just edits.
That'd be great, yeah.
Thank you.
That'd be great.
For doing that. Appreciate it. And thank you, staff, for researching this.
Yeah, this is helpful.
Very. Back to you, Mr. Lucky.
Sorry, I have a couple bullet points.
Oh.
So back to the GMA requirements. What if we don't meet our targets? What are the ramifications?
If you're not showing that you can meet your targets, then you would want to adjust your zoning or density or to allow.
Can we see if another city would accept that? Because sometimes there's trades, some
like
cities want to grow and some don't want to grow that much. And so Bellevue seems to be in a growth. And
well,
they might take
the targets have accounted for that. So they've looked at the whole region and they've scaled us back, knowing that we're a rural city in Duval, and then they've given more to Fredman and Bellevue. And so they've done that. So I'm not sure how they would look at you not meeting or your targets.
I'll try to ask the question a different way. What's the penalty to us for not meeting the goals?
Not showing GMA compliance.
Is that tied back to state funding for projects, etc.?
Yeah, could be. So they have to certify our commerce, and Puget Sound Regional Council both have to review our comprehensive plans and essentially approve them.
So from your perspective, mm-hmm. for the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. do we have any chance of not meeting the goals?
No, I mean, and as you can see on the summary page of so our housing target of 665 units and 1,050 jobs, we're showing a capacity of 2,821 units and 6,907 new jobs.
Sorry, I'm asking an obvious question.
No, can I dovetail on that? And I guess it's, can our current plan be interpreted by any of these reviewers as a message that we're trying to grow more than what they thought and therefore give us more targets than mm-hmm. what they previously would have?
Use it or lose it. Know what you mean?
Well, no. So we've showed that our mm-hmm. land capacity mm-hmm. could reach, you know, I forget how many mm-hmm. residents, you know, and we can develop to such capacity. And they're mm-hmm. saying, well, okay, so we're actually going to give you these requirements, and then we're going to have to do highest and best use.
And are we getting set up to have to grow faster than we might want to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm dubious about that level of push from the state. I don't think they have the authority to tell us how fast to grow or put the brakes on, mm-hmm. unless we're doing something illegally like our water issue. Mm-hmm. I don't think they had the authority or the inclination to talk to Ken and say, listen, Ken, you're not pulling your weight here, mm-hmm. and we're not going to build the highway you want.
Sure.
I don't think that's possible, but I do think it's good they're advising us how we should share the load. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine, I can't see one town east of the Cascades falling for that. they want to stay small. I mean, Danbury will be, they don't want to be, you can't make it go big.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we've talked about some of the issues that play into this. With our assumptions, we didn't assume a market factor. You know, we assumed highest and best use. It's just, and as Mark talked about at the last meeting, it's related to capital facilities planning that, you know, is not realistic at this time. We don't have sewer and water everywhere. So those play in. A ton of transportation projects, you know, yet to be completed that are essential to that development. So we are, you know, well more than exceeding our targets based on all those assumptions. In reality, it's going to be tempered. But it's something to keep in mind. I mean, I think we're developing at an urban growth rate that nobody could debate, and we have downzoned some of the properties, the constrained, and we've created larger lots, and we've kind of took a stance on, well, you know, we're okay with this, but you know, we want to retain here. So it's, you know, and we had talked about jobs, housing balance. I mean, it's something that we'll have to kind of keep track of as the city develops out and continue to make adjustments.
It's still true that if 60% of the landowners want to annex into a city, mm-hmm. that the city has to accept their petition.
Yeah, there's different petition methods. It's usually 10% to do an initial petition, and then 60% to bring it through. At that point, yes, there can be properties adjacent that get folded into that annexation if you have 60% of the assessed value of the properties that want in.
So maybe that's what's happening with the piece down by the golf course. They own all the land, 170 acres. And so maybe that's the law they're using. It just occurred to me that maybe what they're going for.
Yeah, and they have to be willing to that permanent open space, that 4-to-1 is in the criteria here. That's a pretty substantial hit.
Yeah.
That they have to be willing to take.
And it's going to be right along the river and that trail. That's what's making it sound good to the county. They're going to mm-hmm. give up the trail.
County open space system. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at our existing UGA, the piece of property that they're proposing mm-hmm. To add in is all this right here.
Yeah.
So it is does have a natural boundary with the river to the south there. So it... You know, it does make geography sense.
I know that property well. Mm-hmm. That property was just thinned, commercially thinned about a year ago
mm-hmm.
after the county amended forest practices of being allowed next to the shoreline. And they've done a beautiful job of managing that 170 acres of timberlands. It's a single family that owns it. Mm-hmm. And everybody thought they were going to, you know, that was going to be forested until the final harvest, and it looks like they're going to give up on it. Mm-hmm. But they're willing to sell it in conjunction with the golf course, which makes it a win-win.
I'm going to get back to Mr. Lucky and see if you have anything further.
I'm good. I've got general questions I'll pop into as we go. But okay. Those are good. Thank you.
I have one change that I'd like to propose. I think I have a few copies. You can share. I have one more. So I believe it's on page 20, and it's a definition for the constrained residential zoning. And I'd basically like to expand the definition so we can use it in more critical instances. And those would be for steep slopes, stream banks, groundwater recharge areas, wetlands, and native wildlife habitat. And so as the commissioners get a chance to read those changes...
Isn't this covered already just under general land use?
No, this is a new zone that was created, constrained residential.
Right. But I mean, the points you're bringing out seems like it's already covered generically without coming into a specific zone.
I didn't feel it was.
Is this coming out of what we're reading here?
It's actually page 16 of your packets.
Sorry. Okay.
Let me give that to you. 16 of the
So constrained residential, so the constrained residential that we've identified is mostly the floodway and floodplain. So do you want to suggest maybe future, considering future?
If we were to redraw the urban growth boundary, we might want to use constrained residential in more instances, and this would be an easy way to do that without creating a new zone.
Oh, and then you said
I think it fits the original purpose, which is to identify with a specific zone
it's such
areas that you're not going to get 4 DU per acre for various reasons.
Yeah,
such as, and then you say, is currently located. Okay.
Usually land with that kind of constraints is just given up for mitigation.
We're creating unusable land.
And I don't even know if the last sentence is necessary, but if it is, then I just change.
No, I think that's good because it clarifies.
This is good. I'm just saying you're giving a landowner a chance to either tippy toe around or basically just carve it out and just give it up for other consideration.
So
this, you get the effect. Doesn't protect us.
So the zone that we just created the zone, right? Has it been applied anywhere that we can focus on?
Which you're on land use, you want the zoning, and so this area that has the black slashes. So I am looking at the comprehensive plan zoning map for 2015 and identifying the constrained residential currently that's been out.
So maybe this is a question I missed the answer to from missing meetings, but
you're doing okay, John.
The zoning that we created and, in fact, seem to have applied, I assume there was some kind of public hearing for those, and those neighbors were all notified?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there was a public hearing.
So if that process happened, how can we now change anything about what we call the zone?
It doesn't affect their individual properties. What it impacts is our ability to apply the zone to different areas. Mm-hmm. It's not something that the landowner, I guess, is impacted.
So any new properties that would be added into that constrained residential would receive similar notice.
Go through.
There would be a similar public hearing.
Yes.
With regard to any impact.
Yeah, this isn't a proposed change to a property as much as it is to the definition of the zone.
So
that makes sense. I always imagine myself, I'm one of those property owners.
Okay.
And I'm freaking out when somebody changes the zone at all, much less starts calling my property one of these restrained, try taking that to the bank to get financing or something. Right? He just made his land worth practically nothing.
I disagree, but we could think about a change to the name. I'm not married to constrained residential, but. We already have low density.
Yeah, and this did go to the public hearing, and if I remember right, in general, people felt that it was a good change because they didn't think that area was a good location for a more dense neighborhood, is the way I remember the sense of the community that was here. This will go to another public hearing through City Council. When the entire thing is adopted as a whole, there will be one more public hearing as well.
Mm-hmm. We could also just call it rural.
Mm-hmm. Rural residential.
But it doesn't indicate the true purpose of the zone.
Right, if it's in the UGA as well.
Well, if it's in the floodway,
it's constrained.
Nothing's happening.
Sure. Right. Yeah. And a lot of these are.
Floodplain is this piece different dynamics.
We're looking at this orange piece by the trail?
No, south.
Yeah. The black line.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, how's it going along? Okay, got it. Thank you.
So
essentially, it's an area that's already impacted primarily by floodway, where there's already restrictions on construction that go well beyond what we can control as a city.
And one of the maps we looked at was, I think, soils or erosion or something like that.
Yeah, the floodplain map.
We had a couple of them, but it was like a geological survey that had areas mapped out. So my primary thinking was if we grow the UGA boundary, we could apply this zone without creating. So yes, floodway, but also steep slope sensitive areas. If we encounter some wetland or other habitat that we wanted to use it for.
And it's mainly so that if someone's looking at the map knows immediately that you're not going to get four.
Mm-hmm.
It's to represent what is already there by virtue of limitations that are in place.
Or if you have 20 acres, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's my rub is that it's already, it is already a black mark. If someone says that a person's property is in the floodway or a flood zone, and they don't have the resources to prove that it's not, meaning pay for the survey, then by our zoning over their property, we made it really challenging for them to do anything with their land. And this language that is being proposed to add to that, to me, just furthers the black mark. And I appreciate that the neighbors love the idea that nobody's going to build a skyscraper next to them, but what they might not be interpreting is that their grandkids now can't rebuild the living room.
I hear
extreme,
you.
But I
think
to make a point.
Part of our job is to digest some of the data we get in our maps, and maybe this is a good point to be very sensitive of where we apply this zone. But it doesn't negate the fact that having a zone to apply is necessary. That's my biggest point. I think that's a great message that don't be too carefree with it at the same time.
Well, and I don't believe it actually has a limitation of 2 DU per acre. There's nothing in it that says that if they were able to show that they have, that they're not floodway, and that they have adequate. I think
so that density in this area is expected to reach 2 DUs per acre.
Which is fuzzy math language.
And I said density in this area is limited to a maximum of 2 dwelling units per acre.
So you're just hammering this poor guy.
Yes. And the map that I was referring to, just for the record, is the critical area element erosion and debris flow hazards map.
Which comes from FEMA, right?
Isn't that FEMA project they just
didn't know? It's partially county data and partially our own data. We have a very limited amount of steep slopes.
So, Jim, just real quick, for an example, river channel migration hazard map might be an area where we would apply more of that zone in that.
Yeah, but I guess my point is the origin of that map is a broad swath aerial topography concept that FEMA said, let's make sure everybody pays insurance. And now we're telling the private landowner, oh, by the way, you're in this new zone we just created. Sorry, I need to be able to pay attention, but you're not going to make a piss off.
Right back.
Well, Jim's way up. I've noticed more and more a builder's technique, and I just wondered if it's a technique or if it's actual fact that all these developments that are going on south of Cedar Falls Road, it's interesting how they have at the end of the road a sign saying future road extension. And you're looking at a farm behind this thing, you know. I don't know if it's actually going to be being proposed for conversion or not, but or does there even the landowner just have a fence has an idea that his land's been looked at. But is that true that if you put that sign up, that in fact is going to be an extension of the road?
That's the plan.
When that property develops, like Cedar, the development of Cedar Falls, off Maloney, has one to the south, and that's the property that John Day just annexed and is going to develop, and that road will connect through. So, Salish Avenue, if you go and look at it. So, there's a lot of support in our comp plan and our code for connectivity, and and it's just a matter of time. I mean, it could sit that way for 20 years.
But that's what I'm saying. Does the landowner on the other side of the fence have any notion that he's going to be asked to sell his land?
He will not be asked to sell his land. It means nothing until he chooses, until somebody buys that land and chooses to develop it. Yeah, it means somebody could buy that land and keep it just the way it is, and it's more to let the neighbors know that the people that are moving in on that road, that road in the future may be extended through, and that it may not be a dead end, but just so they... so they don't think, have false opinions that they're buying a cul-de-sac house.
Okay, so I'm living in that neighborhood, and all of a sudden I'm getting a bad feeling about my longtime friend and neighbor who's apparently going to subdivide his farm. Mm-hmm. You know, he has no intention of subdividing, but the developer on the other side of the fence says, someday I'm going to come and ask to sell it. It's creating a problem, I think, for that landowner, especially if he's not proposing to sell or convert. Mm-hmm. He has to answer all his neighbors, no, I'm not selling anything. Why is this road sign up there?
Mm-hmm. So my question, I guess, for the staff is, if you have a farm that is part of the Preservation Trust, would we plan a road to go through their farm?
I don't know if we do. Yeah, if we have.
Disconnected.
I thought we had one or two, and Mike would know.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that.
The trust wouldn't have any
Tollgate
bearing.
Farm. Yeah, we have the future streets map is definitely a tool that we utilize in our transportation element, and so it's thought out. It's so we've had some along Maloney, some to go north-south, and one for an east-west. So it's definitely, we look at where could that alignment be, what makes the most sense.
When the Christmas tree farm began to sell chunks of his land, I thought the die was cast there, so I understand those dead-end road signs. But it seems like on the other side of the road, along the road, that guy seems to be pretty happy in his barn near his house, and I don't think he has any intention of subdividing. And it just seems to me that it's pressure.
Yeah, it's not for him. It's for the developer that wants to come in and subdivide.
Yeah.
So.
But he has no interest in selling, so why should that?
Yeah, but he could die tomorrow, and then his property's for sale.
I'm just saying, unless there's an agreement in advance, I would say it's not good policy to let that sign go up. There was pressure on that other guy.
I disagree, but in respect for the other commissioners, I want to get back to this change.
Okay.
Closing and ask you, Mr. Lucky, if you have any other questions or concerns.
I feel bad that I wasn't here for the meeting that actually had this happen, because the zoning all in itself to me is fraught with problems if you're the landowner, and somehow this zone's overlaid on that property. It's not, you know, beyond saying somebody's in a floodway or a flood zone, everything else you add to it creates more confusion, more things to analyze for, sure, the person who has no interest in change, they don't care because they have what they have. But if we're talking about growth and planning and looking ahead in the future, we're creating a zone that basically so restricts the land use that it becomes, you know,
I think of it more. I think of it more where we talked about our pervious versus impervious surfaces. And so if you think about the impervious surfaces of four homes versus two homes, there's a difference in what the water absorption rate is for the total square footage of that lot, right? And I think that's one good thing, but the other side of it is it can support, you know, more wildlife or more whatever habitat. So I think it's just an ability to use that. I don't know that that's a good enough reason to use it. I think that we ought to have a flexible zone, and that's my proposal.
Appreciate that.
I think maybe when Elizabeth gets back, do you want to ask for a vote?
Yes.
Okay. If we...
Then you're open for more discussion then.
If we were to change it, we would match the language that's in critical areas, for example, the native wildlife habitat, fish and wildlife habitat,
groundwater recharge area, critical aquifer recharge area. I mean, just to.
But if they're non-native species, just saying. That's why I put native on purpose. I don't want to support Scotch.
Well, then we need to. Yeah, we might need to make define it more.
Okay.
It's not that, a term used.
That the kind of constraints that. That we might be adding to that property between the UGA and the city line, that looks to be almost 80% of our growth area in terms of, you know, future growth.
The current, you're talking about the current constrained residential?
I'm looking at your the proposed, the area that you're proposing to have that additional constraints. It's already.
Oh, I'm not asking to apply the zone. I'm asking to define the zone.
All right.
The zone has already been applied to the lots that okay. we've identified. And Elizabeth can probably give more detail of the flood issues in that
area. I think that when we looked at it, we had an overlay so you could see how much mm-hmm. that properties.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess part of the language of what you're suggesting includes limiting language. And my understanding when we were putting that zone together was that it was more to be representative of the expected number of homes or units that could be, didn't necessarily mean that it would only be two. But in order to let people know that in this area there are restrictions that mean that you may only reach two. I mean, there are a number of properties when you do a clear overlay of the floodway, which that's not, again, not something we control. The state won't allow them to issue permits for construction in the floodway. So I like where you were headed with that, so that we could use it for more than one thing. But I'm concerned about using language that limits.
Okay. So if we didn't make a change to expected, mm-hmm. expected and kept reach a maximum of two dwelling units per acre, this is the way you prefer it reads.
Mm-hmm. Because again, it was so that we had a better representation of what we would actually be getting in those areas was part of the intent there, rather than saying that you only get to build two houses.
Okay.
Because that doesn't, or per acre.
Yes.
It doesn't apply to every one of those properties, but most of them in that area are floodway, and they're not going to be able to build there.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, let me state this then for the commission, so we're clear on the change. It would include amending constrained residential to add in after floodway and floodplain, steep slopes, stream banks, groundwater recharge areas, wetlands, and native wildlife habitat. And the staff is free to amend that to our common language. And then density in this area is expected to reach a maximum of two dwelling units per acre. Is the unchanged portion should be kept. And then primarily is changed to currently.
Previously, the language read density in the area is expected to reach 2 DU per acre. So we didn't use the maximum. That's what you read, but just pointing that out.
That almost sounds like you're making them build to an acre. I think that they'd be limited to an acre.
So what's your thought on spelling out the two dwelling units per acre? What's that?
Elizabeth would rather have a looser kind of reach a maximum versus limit to a maximum of two.
Are you thinking along the lines of getting rid of any reference to the number of DU per acre?
Well, I think, so I guess the first point is if we're going to have this zone at all, that's my first point, then to suggest that someone has determined by the language here, as it suggests, the residential designation that is recognized for having XXXXX. We can say we recognize the floodway and the flood zone, because that's a FEMA map. To say that we recognize that it has steep slopes, it has stream banks, it has groundwater recharge areas, if we're saying in the code that that area, that person's land, has those issues, that's problematic. because then they're forced to prove that it doesn't in order to do anything with it. And then the follow-on is, if let's say that there's a knoll somewhere in that zone that's not in the floodway, they're still in the zone, and now they're restricted to 2 acres, 2 dwelling units per acre, because they're in the zone, not because of their land use. So this to me has just got all kinds of problems that we won't learn until somebody comes in and says, hey, what are you doing? And it won't be the people living there necessarily, because they're happy. They're staying where they are, nothing's changing. But when you start taking out that much land, how many acres this is, but you're just lopping it off and saying, basically, spelling out that it's not developable land. I don't know if that's the intent, but that's where this goes when you start talking about right in the road and actually being able to do something.
Can we have the flood map?
Floodway is the salmon here, salmon color. Mm-hmm. So these here is property.
So it gets current going across.
Mm-hmm. In flooding events. Mm-hmm. In flooding events.
In flooding events, it has current. It's just not a.
Every 6 weeks in the winter.
Yes, the blue is 100 years.
We're starting. Is our constraints for?
This is more growth.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Starts so here, goes down.
So pink is floodplain.
Floodway.
Over to right here.
So I'm sorry, I see blue, I assume that's floodway.
Special flood hazard. Floodplain is okay. Blue. Salmon color is floodway.
Okay. So you can't build in the salmon color.
Yeah, you can't build anything.
Right.
So, you know, this lot right here goes all the way to the river, you can develop right here. This lot goes all the way to the river, you can develop right there. It's going to have more of an impact here on these larger lots. There's a few. Otherwise, here's a little bit of a larger lot. Here's one. So there's a few larger lots that are undeveloped with floodplain. Majority are have floodway constraints.
And Jamie, those designations they're coming from the FEMA map, right? Mm-hmm.
This
and
is
how old is that paper?
How old is the mapping?
When did that created?
Well, when was the latest
2005.
2005.
There's a preliminary map that's been done with some minor that you can review, but it's not been adopted yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So another off the mark question was also on my list before I came tonight. Was they're talking about adjusting the levee system.
Mm-hmm. King County is.
Once that's done, I can suggest that it'll probably change.
Can you please define adjust?
King County is doing a whole South Fork Snoqualmie River study, and they've been working a lot on it. They're planning on coming with public hearings in a couple months, I think. So we've been meeting with them in this area in general. I think you're going to see, they actually might have already purchased one property, but you're going to see a little bit of buyouts.
So their goal is to look at the cost of the replacement of the levee versus the cost of buying out homes.
Yeah, all kinds of different tools they're looking at. Levee setbacks. The left bank is lower than the right bank, so increasing both banks.
Removing some gravel that has built up.
Yeah.
Advanced gravel recovery.
Expanding the bridge that's on 202 to allow for the river to have a wider channel to go through.
Their model so it doesn't shows.
Get back kind of bottlenecked.
Mm-hmm. Will that bridge expansion include a pedestrian walking path?
I would probably would. Yeah.
I would assume. So they have a lot of
signage for the element as well.
They have a lot of projects and a lot of money
to pull
from
the
King County Flood District in the future. This is a King County's telling us this is one of the high priority areas. Mm-hmm. So we do have a lot of funds. It would take a lot of money to do all that they wanted to do. But the overall, if all of their projects were to happen, we would see a net benefit in the flooding issue up here. More protection for the properties. That's the intent.
For not only us, but also for communities downstream.
Yeah. So Toba River Ranch is seeing a large amount of scouring. It essentially comes out of the end of our levees like a shotgun. And it's caused substantial damage in that area. And for bank erosion, then they would have expected to see. So there's a lot of this.
So the change is before you. Do you need a restate or?
Mm-hmm. I don't, I'm good.
Any commissioners? Any final comment, Jim?
I think if you pull this dwelling density point out of it, then to me the language is redundant to the facts that are already there, and you haven't really stuck it to the landowner by telling how many units you can build in this land. That's the piece that's most significant to me.
Do you feel that not knowing is better than knowing what your developable potential is?
Well, there's so many restrictions that are already there, particularly floodway, floodplain. Those things are hugely restrictive. And for us to go another step that says, well, if you get through those hurdles, we're going to nail you with density as well, just because.
And keep in mind that these policies will guide what we'll do once we have finished the comprehensive plan updates, and we'll have to revisit the code and open up the bulk and dimension standards and discuss exactly how you would like to see this zone apply. So there will be additional opportunities.
You're talking about floodplain or floodway. I'm thinking about like these sensitive aquifer recharge areas. Why not, you know, think about something broader where we shouldn't have such a coverage of permeable surface? And I think in that case, saying the units is more valuable than not.
Well, I think I'm just coming at it from a different place. I always come at it from the landowner's perspective, and I get rubbed the wrong way when a group of folks can sit around on a Thursday evening and restrict somebody's land use. So that's the first place I go to. And I get the concept of let's kind of encourage growth in a direction where it can be successful, and that whole thing makes sense. And I appreciate the points you're spelling specific things out here. But I think you by spelling it out, you've created a hurdle that doesn't otherwise exist for the existing owners of the property. And where we might go, and I can just imagine down the road 10 years from now, let's say this UGA is much broader. There's a river on the other side of town, too. And all of a sudden, because somebody can apply this zone kind of willy-nilly because it seems to fit the river issue, now we've really restricted ourselves beyond what I think everybody might intend.
And maybe particularly concentrating in the middle.
Maybe it's not, it's maybe we should be thinking about building design. You know, we have a lot of homes that go up a story to get out of the way of the floodway along the rivers. In fact, the government pays for that. They don't make a move, they just build them up. Maybe in this particular zone, we require construction designs that keeps the house or the residents from blocking the floodway.
That's actually in our critical area.
Well, so
they raise it up, and they wouldn't put it on the ground. They bring it up to the high water mark plus a foot.
Sorry.
Are you gonna? You know, I'm talking about. You have a driveway to get there. There's a whole host of things why I think it's better to have lower units and density in those areas.
I'm saying that in that area, there ain't nothing. You could actually put something there. And driveways don't have to be permanent. It's in the floodway, so it gets washed. So you take, you know, you begin to develop a different lifestyle. But you know, I'm talking about trying to help Jim here with the idea that we're not telling a landowner he can't build there; he just has to build under certain conditions.
Well, there's two points. So the density piece, that to me, that's the most obvious issue that I have, is we're using this constrained residential to say, oh, by the way, this means no more than two dwelling units per acre. What's that about? That's a disconnect to me, because we're spelling out the zone that relates to floodways and floodplains, and we're saying you can build on it, but we're, no matter what you do, build it up or around or whatever, you still can't get more than two per acre. That's a takings.
Well, then I would.
Because the density is greater than that
I would
now.
I would make the argument that would allow more than two.
They could.
Yeah, that would, I'd make the argument.
Sure.
That
well, it's more than that now.
If any structure is built in that area, it has to be above a certain level, so it doesn't restrict the flow of the water. That's all we're trying to do is keep the water unrestricted.
Right. Why have we not accomplished that just by having it in the floodway, in the floodplain? That land's already designated. Restricted by the definition of floodway and floodplain.
Right.
If we take this additional language and apply it to the zone, we're adding more hurdles on top of the ones that we're really concerned about.
I get that.
So the landowner, to go get financing, to sell his property to a developer, to maybe do a remodel, if the bank's going to freak out when they read this about where the land is. Because it's all of these things that we mentioned, because of the way this worded, that it's recognized for having these things. The owner's then going to have to be forced to prove that it doesn't have these things.
And I respect the geologic map, and after OSO, it doesn't hurt to be overly sensitive about steep slopes and gravel and that kind of thing, and building around that stuff. But that's historically been a riverbed for the eons, and it's been all over the valley. It just happens to be there right now.
Right.
But, you know, I'm just trying to see your point of view.
Yeah.
Being a former forester, I just said, just get away from that stuff. Yeah. But you can't, because people live there. I remember when the county was trying to shut down downtown Stone Pond.
I just want to get Elizabeth had a point to make about some of the floodway where...
Floodway, no building. It's clear. There's state law that controls that.
Yeah.
Special flood hazard area, they already are required to construct elevated for new construction. And has North Bend adopted the King County's 3 feet above?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay. So, according to FEMA, you only have to go 1 foot above the base flood elevation. King County had led the way to do 3 feet above. And the idea is you get them over, if you're going to lift them anyway, get them over the 500 year floodplain.
Mm-hmm.
Minus one. So, 2 extra feet of wood. So that's already something that's going, if someone builds in that special flood hazard area outside of the floodway, they're already going to have to elevate. There's an increased cost of construction related to that. So that's kind of a non-issue for anything that we're doing here. But my idea in our original conversations in talking about this was to correctly represent from a planning perspective what we would be getting out of that space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit, you know, any land purchase kind of goes with the whole buyer beware. This simply makes it very clear that we know that we're not going to get 4 DU per acre in that area. We know there are constraints that exist. For our purposes for planning, we need to know that we can't count on 4 residences coming out of that space. So it's a way to recognize that in those areas. And it makes sense to me that we would spread that to other areas that have similar constraints. It's a way that when you look in that map, you know what we're dealing with within the city limits. And it, again, it's simply a way to state what already exists, and that may be redundant. But at the moment, it means that someone could sell that property, and if the buyer doesn't do their research or doesn't have a great real estate agent who knows their stuff to do it for them, they could purchase that land with no clue what they're getting into.
Well, that's kind of like if we want to add another concept, we could say that there's underground storage tanks. We don't know that. We could say that, and that would force the owner, or the buyer, in this case, mm-hmm. your scenario, to have to prove that there's not one, or go through the hoops process. So the piece that I'm struggling with,
just like a permit application comes in, on top of this zone with the language that we're talking about putting in, that's, you can't approve it, because you've got to make sure that they don't have the specific issue that we're calling out inside the zone, which may or may not be there. We know it's a floodway, we know it's a flood zone, or at least we're trusting the FEMA maps to tell us that. But we don't know anything about steep slopes on a given lot. We don't know anything about recharge area on a given lot.
I disagree, and we've been provided with the map, and if we're going to apply the zone to steep slopes, we will look at those maps again and get more firm data. I think I appreciate all of Elizabeth's comments. The only thing I will add is the zone isn't going to be applied to any other areas. I think if we were to annex or we would expand our urban growth boundary, and you're looking at those 2 and 5 acre lots that are along the rivers, that we might just say 2 per acre, or you could subdivide the lot, or you could do part and part, right? The lots along the stream bank, that part is 2 per acre. I think that as we go and plan out those other areas, this will be something that we can use proactively to ensure that the growth is concentrated in the center of the city and in where we can deliver services. And we fulfill our rural vision statement by keeping other areas that are more native settings as those rural settings.
Shouldn't take Gary's side. Sorry, I should have thought of this, but the jurisdiction is going to be taken to court if they knowingly permit buildings to be built in the hazard area at a point after the starting point. In other words, the city can't be sued after the fact. These maps are dated, whatever, 05, whatever. But, so who's ever in there before that date? The city's protected from impacts of hazards. But knowing that the hazard exists, allowing permits to be executed and built, that puts the city at risk in terms of being sued. That's a problem that probably we haven't talked about, but that does concern our legal staff, I know that.
Yeah.
So that would be a thing, Bill, we want to consider that.
Well, I think that goes both ways, because the landowner might come after us because we told the set that there's a steep slope on his land and he's not.
Yeah, he sees, right? He sees 10 houses in his neighborhood, why can't I build? All of a sudden he's, and that's what lawyers do, they make money on those cases.
Yeah.
But as planners, we probably have to realize that and realize, you know, that we err on the side of the city and we have to be concerned about that.
Well, we also hear from the individual citizens and we take their comments and their zoning changes.
There's a public safety issue in that area as well, because the concern of overtopping the I-90, there are some specific issues in that area that makes it not necessarily the best place for there to be development or residential construction that would have a population center that could be impacted. And I think that the meeting that King County has here in a couple months will have a lot more information about that. And I say that as someone who's seen photos of the last time I-90 fell apart in a flood. So, it makes an impression when you see a freeway that's been ripped to pieces.
Anybody want to call the question? Or vote?
Call the question.
All right. All those in favor of amending constrained residential to add steep slopes, stream banks, groundwater recharge areas, wetlands, and native wildlife habitat, and strike primarily and insert currently. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Nay. Motion carries 3-1. All right. That was the only change I had. Is there any other further comment or changes to be made?
Just a clarification on that. Did you also did we change it to density in this area is expected to reach?
No.
Dwelling units, you kept it at
We left that.
We left that alone, except I would appreciate you spelling out 2 dwelling units.
Okay.
As you did above.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on? Yes. Mr. Ryan.
Page 20 of 30.
Okay.
second paragraph on TDRs.
Yes.
Second to the last section, beginning with permanent preservation of the land. I want to make sure that we're not talking about restricting the land from being used for anything but conversion. In other words, if the land, if the TDR, if the development rights were sold, the crop on the land can still be managed. It's not, they didn't lose the right to manage the asset on the land. It's just the managing. They've sold their development rights.
Yes.
That still doesn't seem to come through here in this discussion. It just seems like the lay citizen would read that and believe that everything on that land is being preserved. But what's being preserved is the, it's actually the negative, actually what's being lost is the right to develop.
Are you looking at the sentence that starts with permanently preserved land is established through a conservation easement?
Actually, I'm just starting that. Yeah.
Page 20, huh?
On page 20, on the second to the last line, read and receive permanent preservation of the land. I don't think that's true. The land's not being preserved. The development rights is being removed. The land still can be managed for whatever is on top of it by the landowner.
Yeah, it's saying through TDR, landowners could receive financial compensation without developing or selling their land. Status quo. And the public could receive.
So you think if it would say, and the development rights would be removed from the land?
Yeah, but the public may wake up one day and find that landowner harvesting the trees. They might just call City Hall and just... guy's logging his land, because what it says here, it's, they have no other way to interpret that other than that the land's being preserved.
Mm-hmm. So isn't TDR going to be specific? That the language is going to be created for that transfer for that particular property.
Yeah, transfer development rights.
Right. But I mean, so there's going to be a contract, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that specific property that says this, yeah. Including, I'm calling it the same language you're looking at, which is the public could. Receive permanent. That may be something they agree to.
And that's been constantly confused by the lay public who are expecting to be able to walk over this land with trails. They only bought the right to not develop it.
Right.
They didn't buy any right to cross it. They didn't buy any right to own the timber. None of that. But this little sentence suggests that. I just think we need to use a few more words to actually make it clear what was actually lost. And not preserve. What was lost from that land was the right to develop.
Do you have a sentence you would suggest adding?
Not at the moment. But I'll be happy to devise one, but I'm just saying that mm-hmm. if you think in terms of lost rather than preserve, what was lost was the right to develop.
Do you want a moment to think about one and propose it?
No.
Is this a
I'd like to try and move this off of our table tonight.
What about something along the lines of a sentence that states that while the land remains in private ownership?
Yeah.
Because that makes it clear that it's not public lands to walk across.
I mean, the definition of TDR, a TDR has it in. I think I'll just go back to the definition of what a TDR is and build from that.
And it does say in the first paragraph that... the second to last sentence does end with "in public access is not required." So the preserved land is established through a conservation easement without cost to taxpayers or added regulations to landowners, and public access is not required.
I would say it's not acquired.
It's not acquired.
Something that makes it clear that the land remains in private ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I think we get that point across. That this is.
Isn't this TDR concept is it's a it's not our it's not unique to the city.
Maybe correct.
This is all the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if this language comes from somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys want to take a few minutes to read both paragraphs, it might be helpful. The third sentence says landowners receive a financial benefit from selling development credits without having to develop or sell the land itself.
And I think the word credits is also that's all language that comes out of the divisor of TDRs. Well, I don't think I have a credit. I've been buying those rights by paying taxes. I mean, it's not a credit I have. I've earned the right to sell it. So it's not a credit. Mm-hmm. I'm buying the right, and I'm willing to sell it.
So how about then on the, what is it, the first, the second, that's the third sentence, landowners receive the financial benefit from selling development rights. So strike credit and replace it with rights.
Yeah.
Anybody opposed to that?
Development rights.
Okay. Without having to develop or sell the land itself. Maybe a new sentence could be inserted after that to make that the landowner may continue to farm or use the land in a private.
Well, I'm just making it say, other than the right to develop, the landowner retains all rights associated with the title.
Other than the right to develop, the landowner retains all other rights to.
To title.
To title or use of the land?
Yeah. Well, not to title. He owns the land. He or she owns the land.
Okay.
They have title to it.
Retains ownership of the land, so.
So these agreements, the ones I've seen,
we're confusing
all over the board.
Yeah.
We're confusing a conservation easement with a TDR. Mm-hmm. When you sell a conservation easement, you are in fact giving up some of your rights to your property, mm-hmm. other than development rights. You're selling access. You're selling expected use of your property. And you're getting paid for that, conservation easement.
Tax credits.
Yeah.
So the landowner retains
all other rights to that are as title holder. Only giving up one right.
One of the sentences I found on the county one is the market. So it allows rural landowners to receive financial compensation without having to sell or fully develop their land.
Well, that's kind of what we said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think this is different because it speaks directly to that I've done that, but I haven't given up this part of it, and I can still manage the property without granting public use.
Yeah, or asking permission to do it.
Yeah. You changed one of the sentences that we were leaving the same. I noticed as you were
talking. Oh, before?
Yeah. We didn't, the one regarding the 2D per acre of history and residential, we weren't changing that.
Other than spelling out 2 dwelling
units. Oh, I thought you wanted to change it. Didn't see this area. No, let's go back to it. Sorry. I was trying to catch up.
Multitasking again.
What page was it in
there? Something that this time we were talking about.
16?
16, we wanted that to get in there accidentally. Sorry.
Thanks for catching.
So, okay, so Lynn, I heard, I don't think it gets to Mr. Ryan's point.
Okay.
And if it's clear, as you said, the landowner retains all of the rights to title or of title, and you wanted something on the end of that?
No, that works too. I think saying, making it clear it's private ownership. I think that that's what computes to people reading it in terms of understanding the concept. And I was just trying to figure out how to frame that into what's there in a way that makes sense. I'm just thinking someone who's reading this and we're trying to make it clear to them that this isn't a public park.
The landowner retains all the rights of title and private use of the lot or private use of the property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the word private just really kind of makes it clear this is not, it's not public land. You don't get to go for a hike up there.
Would you say the landowner retains
all other rights?
The landowner retains all their rights of title and private use of the lot.
And the property remains in private ownership?
Private use.
Yes.
Either way.
I think private use, okay. We're talking about public access, and private use means that's what it is.
Making it clear that this is not.
And then in the second paragraph, where it could, public could receive a permanent preservation of the land, that is all possible by the TDR. Mr. Ryan, are you satisfied?
Yes.
Okay. Anything further?
So the second to last sentence, that's what you've inserted in the first paragraph. You've inserted a second to last sentence between required and the credits.
I'm counting periods. One, two, three. After the third sentence, before permanently preserved land.
Okay. The landowner retains all other rights of title and private use of the lot.
The property.
Private use of the property. Okay.
May or may not be a lot.
Now, the only thing you mentioned is if there is a TDR recorded or agreement, it might take other rights.
That's the whole point I was making. That agreement can be anything we can imagine.
Yeah. So.
Unless otherwise agreed, that's a comma at the end of that.
Actually, I don't. Are you speaking from experience in that, Jim? I'm not aware that.
Well, because yes, actually, there's a couple places I can think of where a developer came in. I'll even take your neighbor's example, the dead end street. There was a purchase of a, call it a tear down house on 10 acres adjacent to a development. And in order to get a city to allow additional density in the development, the developer agreed basically to have a life estate on this parcel that I just mentioned. And nothing changed to that parcel. It was left out of the development and eventually became a park. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it was all structured in the development approval. And that was using the same concept. So
what's that life estate on the market? The TDR is marketable. Was that life estate marketable?
It would have been, I would assume, but the agreement to do it was the piece.
Yeah.
It kept it, as long as she lived there, nobody was going to touch her property, even though it became part of the density of the new development. So that was the kind of, who would have thought that agreement would come into play. So I guess my point is these things are really cool, because the city, whoever's authorizing its agreement, whoever's giving it, codification, it's whatever they agree to.
That would be another instrument, though. I see how they would come to agreement, but there'd be separate things. You'd have a TDR, which is basically, it's like a check. I mean, it's basically,
you can have a TDR and outlines.
You should write two with the TDR agreement in place.
Can you highlight it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, all of that stuff could happen.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's a cool concept that really could mean anything.
But it has to be marketable from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Most TDRs used to be going into Seattle. Mm-hmm. We were wanting to densify Seattle and ruralize the outer county. That's how TDRs came into play. Now it's going, they're beginning to do them from rural to rural now.
Yeah, they're all over the country. Yeah. The concept is there. So, very cool.
So here is the revised statement that kind of reflects that discussion. The landowner retains all their rights of title and private use of the property subject to conformance with the TDR agreement in place.
Perfect.
Okay.
Excellent point. Any others? We're getting close.
We have 2 hours to go.
I have a question. I have a question for Mark, actually. Going back to your planning memo that was included with our last meeting packet, on LDR, the four dwelling units per gross acre, you mentioned that 7,500 square feet minimum lot size, 8,000 square feet average lot requirements.
Correct.
And so was your planning around 7,500 lot sizes?
No. 8,000.
8,000.
Because anything over 2-lot development has to meet 8,000. You will get some fill in at 7,500, but and below that in legal lot sizes that exist.
The land supply rules that you did, are they reflected in, like, the critical areas? And if you want me to be specific, if you don't have the memo, I can let you. It was parcel zone, parks, open space, and public facilities, right-of-ways, public, private, unknown ownership parcels, utilized as rights-of-way, build-out subdivisions.
Those have no potential.
But is there a tally, like, how much that accounted for? Because I know public open space is quite a large amount of property, but I don't know what's the breakdown of what removals, you know, I guess, is it a total acre? Is it 20 acres? Or is it reflected as part of, like, the critical areas that couldn't be developed?
Some of it is reflected as critical areas, but areas that are undevelopable that, like, are held in joint ownership, plat tracts, things like that, they have no net value. They could be aggregated to give you a number, but I did not aggregate them in the process.
Okay.
Sorry. No, that's a good question.
A technical question. Where are goals 1 and 2? I began seeing goal 3, but I couldn't go back and find goals 1 and 2. I begin on page 15 with goal 3.
Page 8.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Document like this, are we able to talk about properties that are not included inside the UGA or not? Is it not cricket to do that?
That are currently not.
Because in our discussion here on river above River Bend or at River Bend,
mm-hmm.
There's a very important element there that isn't mentioned because it's not in the city, and that's the golf course and the restaurant and the little golf store. That's a retail center. It's actually a community center at the restaurant, but because it's not in the city, you can't mention it being there.
No,
it's
you
not
can.
Urban growth boundary.
You can. You're just not charged to plan for it. So
yeah.
So it's, you could.
Well, it's called the River Bend Cafe. I mean, I think they think of themselves as being the River Bend area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying that just as a matter of, it does seem mm-hmm. to be a place to go if you live in the area. I go there a lot.
Mm-hmm. Coming back to my UGA question, why isn't it bigger? So we can formally focus mm-hmm. on.
I don't know why it was never drawn in. It certainly would have been, but maybe the landowner or that timber owner probably didn't want to be in the city for very good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could say the neighborhood, let me check down where that starts off. You could say the neighborhood has a district center, or that's the language we use here, outside of the North Bend UGA.
Adjacent to it. But yeah. Just for the public reading this, they're trying to figure out where I want to live. I don't think they buy their homes by this, but mm-hmm. when you're reading about the neighborhood, this it seems like the River Bend has nothing, when in fact it has a very mm-hmm. active mm-hmm. commercial use.
I remember watching a herd of elk be scared off by a shotgun.
That's right.
So how about private parks within the rivers of your red gathering places? And do you want to be specific and say Cascade Golf Course?
Yeah.
Cascade Golf Course and restaurant.
There's a little market as well as the restaurant.
Retail activity?
I'm not worried about market being there.
You're not worried about calling that out?
Yeah. It's not a market. Is it a market? I've never seen a market there.
The what's attached to the pro shop has a little market there.
Yeah.
You can get a sundry store.
I've never been inside.
You should go see it. Yeah.
Can I buy a beer in there?
You sure can.
To golf, yeah. Let's see where I'm at. And a Cascade Golf Course and associated restaurant and commercial uses.
There you go.
Provide additional services for.
Question to educate me. What is the term complete streets? Is that a term?
It is.
Complete streets.
Mm-hmm.
Before divisions you move on,
for complete streets.
My question to you is, do we name specific businesses in general in our plan? And if so, fine. But I don't know if I've seen a lot of naming.
Yeah. We have.
So we wouldn't be capital then?
I would just call it a regional golf course.
Nine. So it's considered a links course, not even a golf course.
It's a great place for beginners. If you get used balls.
Next question. Oh, complete streets.
Complete streets. I just pulled up a definition of port because you can say it better than I can. But complete streets are streets for everyone. They are designed and operated to enable safe access for all users, including pedestrians, bicyclists, motorists, and transit riders of all ages and abilities. Mm-hmm. So creating, the pedestrian network.
Multimodal. Transportation element talks more about that, but yeah.
So without a bike lane, is it an incomplete street?
Yeah,
it might be. Yeah.
Or it's another type. This
term complete streets comes under the transportation element was referenced in this paragraph, in this section. I've never seen it used before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that I think Gary's mentioned.
Incomplete streets we have.
You mentioned the desire to open transportation paths again.
Let me just say once more that I think this time around this is so much easier to read and so much.
Well, thanks to you all for your attention to detail.
Now you're putting up with us.
Are you going to go read it again tonight, Nick?
Just for the fun of it.
Any final thoughts, commissioners?
I have one that doesn't relate to this, but it really does relate to this. I haven't heard recently two things, pipeline projects. I haven't seen that list. Love to.
Oh, yeah, it came out at the last meeting.
And is there any update that you guys can pass on related to sewage?
Before we get there, I'll do that at the end of the meeting.
Okay.
I want to stick on this document.
Fair enough, yep.
I think before us, with the changes we made tonight, I feel really confident that, one, the city's going to be able to grow at a moderate pace. It has a lot of favoring of low-density residential, which fits with our rural business. I think a year from now, we'll see what development has taken place, and we can adjust if necessary. I like the pie chart where it has a good breakdown of where we've zoned, and I think for future updates, it'll be a good place to check back in to see how we move forward and what we've allocated on. I wish the staff thought we could use some more zones.
More colors. We're out of colors.
Yeah. That's my only wish that I'll leave at that. Other than that, final thoughts?
Just one question. Page 26.
Mm-hmm.
The chart. The bottom quarter of the page, HDR under third, fourth column. I may be misunderstanding this chart, but there's no activity, no pipeline projects today. Is that accurate?
HDR, correct.
So there are there are some apartments in the pipeline, but they're not in the HDR. So
reflected in NB.
They're in the NB zone.
Okay, thank you for that.
And
I'd like to share Stan and Gary on his general comments about this document. I think it's actionable. I think it's moderate. Modest, I think, is moderate. And I think it's achievable.
Mm-hmm. So, with that said, anybody like to make a motion?
Let the vice chair make the motion.
Making me talk. I move that with the changes that we've made tonight, we accept the land use element as
amended.
As amended. Thank you.
Second.
So that was a motion by Elizabeth and a second by Jim. Any further comment? I'll just thank the staff for their hard work, their quick turnaround on our last meeting updates, and thank you very much for your diligence and patience. So, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The land use element has been approved. So, last part of the meeting is good of the order. Anything for the good of the order, Mr. Lecky?
Yeah, I'd love to see us do some timekeeper on the future agendas. I know we started, in fact, I thank Mike for getting us started with our 7:05. We'd never get out of here by 7:10 that I can ever recall. So maybe give us an hour.
One meeting.
On the clock.
I was not vice chair. I chaired. We passed three things, and we were done in about 5 minutes.
So I asked that favor because it will help us all cover the ground that we need to cover in a certain period of time. That's a favor request. And then the other one was two things. The pipeline conversation you're already going to do. That's thanks ahead for that. And then the other one, this dike adjustment is causing a lot of angst when the grandmother type knocks on somebody's door on a Saturday afternoon and says, we'd like to buy your land, and if you don't sell it to us, we'll take other action. Yeah. And I'm just curious what's going on out there and what you're hearing from.
Right. Could you be a little more specific about what dike you're referring to? Where?
I don't know, actually. I'm getting this from several property owners who are going to be impacted in some way.
Southwest.
Yep. I mean, it's literally, that's what's really happening. That's how they're learning of this process, is right. Someone, a county official, is coming out and starting a conversation about acquiring their land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the public meeting is coming up. They haven't set the date.
I saw Rochelle at the chamber meeting, and she indicated first or second week of July.
Yeah, so they have sent some letters and gone out to a few property owners in that area. We were talking along the South Fork. They're not planning major buyouts or anything, from what I understand. It's pretty limited. It's on pretty constrained land anyways. But the county doesn't go in and condemn, or it's a willing purchase and sale. And that's how they approach it, at fair market value. So if they don't have interested property owners, they go away and maybe revisit it in a couple years and work on other parts of their projects. But it's not a forceful thing. It's not a,
when they,
we're taking your land.
When their engineers draft their proposals, mm-hmm. as far as the routing and where the waterways change,
mm-hmm.
is there a way we can become privy to the mm-hmm. prospect of change?
So, yeah, they've developed some of their alternatives, and they're still refining it. So that's where they're coming with the public meeting. And we'll, I think, kind of unveil it all, get public input. So they're not, you know, they're not planning projects yet, as far as, you know, engineering projects yet. It's all conceptual at this point. We could do this, we could do this, what about this, you know, and then come out to the public, see what's the priority, what do you guys like, what do you not like. So they've done that with the cities, or the city, and we'll let you know when that meeting is going to happen. And you guys can share that.
Some of the energy is some of these folks that have, you know, 5 acres in mm-hmm. their house, and they thought maybe we'd do some development down mm-hmm. the road, and they're getting this knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty spooky
mm-hmm.
for them.
Yeah.
So
particularly those that are inside the city limits who are getting that mm-hmm. door knock. It would be nice if we had some detail.
I think they did say one or two properties in the city is what they thought, and then the rest are outside of the city. Just so you guys know the scale.
Yeah. I've got a good order item I'd like to just at this point share with the commission. Something came to my attention without me even going out and looking for it. I was just flagged down by a passing car on my street. They were asking me if my neighbor was still living there. They were looking at buying a house on the river, and since she's still living there, she's alive and well. And we struck up a conversation, myself and this woman, and determined that she was a owner of a residence in Shamrock. Mm-hmm. Okay, she lived very close to the hotel project. And she realized that I was on the planning commission, so we struck up a conversation. I said, I asked her, what do you know what's going on with the hotel site? It looks like it's dead. And, you know, do you have any information that you can share with me? Because I don't have any information on it. Well, she couldn't. She was hoping she might get information from me, and so we were both kind of wondering what was going on with the hotel. She made one observation to me that I didn't understand. I could understand it in various amount of ways. That what she reported to me was that apparently the site has created a drainage ditch that drains water off the construction site into a drainage pipe that is used to withdraw floodwaters from Shamrock. It's an engineered installed pipe. And it looks like, it doesn't look like, this drainage system was targeted to drain into that pipe. And at the time it was a dry day, I had anything going, but I was concerned about whether or not there was any silt or any oils in that water, was it being properly filtered. So I was going to come to the city and ask them about that. I just felt like didn't sit well with me. So I did contact the city today, and I talked to Tom, and when I got into the details, he said, why don't you call Brian's working the project. So I did talk to Brian. Brian told me the following. He said, and he gave me more than I asked. I never met Brian, but in a meeting, it seems like both these guys seem to be very competent guys. Mm-hmm. Brian's telling me this, that yeah, when the property was first permitted and he went to construction, they ran into a lot of problems with shallow water tables, such that the original hotel that was going to go there backed out of it, and that the site was picked up by Marriott. And Marriott has instituted a whole different clearing grading process on that site, but they were being required by the city to install some storm drains that would keep water on site up to a level, and then that the water be allowed to drain off. And they would be allowed to maximize the retention of storm water up to a level. He didn't give me details. I would remember that detail anyway, but I thought that was interesting. But that the site still looks like there's no money going into it. It's just basically at a standstill. And I questioned Brian more about that. He didn't have any more details other than the physical details that he gave me, that the water is going through a filtration system. So the water that's draining off into the river is clear in terms of what ecology provides. There's no contaminants, there's no oils, there's no pesticides, nothing's going into the water, it's all being filtered out. So what's going there is good water. Not perfect, not drinking water, but it's good to go. So I'm satisfied that the city's doing their job in managing that. I'm concerned that the project jumped off to such a bad start. Money's being lost. I don't see how anybody is going to open the hotels that have come out as they expected. As I understand it, part of that hotel, when it's built and up and running, is going to be allowed to flood. that the parking lot is going to be below the high water mark, and that it's going to be, the parking lot's going to be a retention pond, functional retention pond, and that at a certain point, if the river continues to rise, it'll be allowed to drain off into the river. Now, that's the damnedest thing I ever heard in terms of a public business.
It's flood proof standards, though. It's one of the ways they do flood proof. If you go to FEMA's website, there's a huge amount of information that talks about that. And the options that they have, that's actually one of the things that they recommend for commercial. Is this, that you do design in that way.
If I was a traveling public, I wouldn't even want to park my car in a known flood zone. I just wouldn't do it.
Well, I think that's, you know, maybe a note to us on the Planning Commission is why would we zone it that way if we know it's not really a suited use for that site. Yeah. So, food for thought.
So just thought I'd bring up what I learned about it. Just, I was curious enough to follow through on that.
Mr. Lecky, you mentioned a favorite word of mine that you might want to bring up again. Sure. Could we get an update on our sewer system and what's being done and what we're looking
at? You want us to talk sewer.
I went to a recent council meeting and I understand about the dryer.
You might be able to brief us more on the details of the dryer. And the,
you heard Don DeBerg speak about the dryer, and they're going to be removing some of the solid waste.
Mm-hmm. Well, that we're not going to use the basically a dryer dries it out, right? And so it weighs less to ship off dry than it is wet. And I guess the content is less, but the amount of electricity we're using was costing so much. Mm-hmm. The dryer was having problems and malfunctioning. So they're just shipping off something like 40% solid.
Right. Another important note about that is the dryer's one of the prime sources of the smell. Mm. So it should help cut back on some of the smell.
Mm-hmm. My question, which hopefully we'll have somebody from our wonderful Public Works Department come, is to talk about, now that we've done this planning, what kinds of systems and when can we start to see some
ideas
flow? Because I certainly have an opinion on what I'd like to see.
Yeah, and you guys will be queuing up the capital facilities element in the near future. That's a key part of that element, and Public Works will be coming. So we'll definitely get them prepped, and I think they'll have the more solid answers of the long-range plan.
And with that, will we understand the volume of water that we've been granted from Seattle?
Will we understand it?
Can we know what that is? Is that something that we can find out?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's our water. Mm-hmm. Not Seattle's water.
Water we purchase, every year.
The right. That's mitigation water. I don't know all the exact details, but it maintains stream flow volume in the Snoqualmie, mainly the South Fork. And it's so we can withdraw water from our Centennial well. It's not really having to do with sewer or sewer process.
Oh, no, not sewer. I'm talking, I jumped ahead, I'm sorry. Okay. My other thing is, when we're talking about the capital facilities, I believe that's also water, isn't it?
Okay. So,
just something I want to just know for just, how big can we go?
Right. Yeah, I'll note these in we can revisit them with the capital facilities.
Okay. Explosion site update.
Yeah. So we've been working with the developer who's the owner of the 76 station, and he has purchased the property as of early this month and is getting ready to submit his application. We don't have an application yet, but we've been working with him to make sure that when he does submit, it'll be per our code. And it is, right now he's proposing a mixed-use building. It'll be about 4,000 square feet of retail commercial space on the ground floor up adjacent to North Bend Way, 32 apartments above it, units above it, and then he'll be providing pedestrian access into Torgerson.
Awesome.
So hopefully Torgerson Our Parks Commission's been working on updates to Torgerson, so as that's updated too, there'll be a pedestrian access provided from North Bend Way through the site.
Great.
Really?
Yeah. He's been really amenable to all the city's ideas. Been really great to work with.
So my next thing is, I believe it's on Mercer Avenue in Seattle. They have some new bike lanes as well as some awesome LED street lamps. I know Tanner Electric is moving to all LED street lamps, not that we have a light in our city, do we?
LED?
No, do we have any? Yeah, we do have our lamps downtown.
Yeah, we do.
And along Park Street, is it the one that's mm-hmm. right?
I have one. Are you going to adjourn us?
No, not yet. So my request is, I would like to know what their standards were, so when we get to our transportation plan, we can look at if we're going to have bike paths. If we want to make one thoroughfare of a bike path, I think that's a really nice model that they have.
You want to know what Seattle's standards are for bike paths?
The one they built along Mercer, specifically. I think that if you're going to Seattle Center, Pacific Science Center.
I think you have an elevated bike path.
If they improve the levees, that would be a great,
mm-hmm. yeah.
great problem. Okay, last one is Scott's Broom has been a passion of mine, and I've declared to all my neighbors to keep Middle Fork Scotch Broom free. And
I thought you were going to say you're planting it.
No, apart from the school district, which is ignoring my calls, we've done quite a great job. Whose purview is it to make that a noxious weed required mm-hmm. for removal in North Bend? Does it rest with the Planning Commission or City Council?
Well, I think Planning Commission could make a recommendation. We'd want to coordinate with Parks and Public Works.
I think the noxious weed board of King County would be your friend.
I'm sorry,
I think the noxious weed board of King County would be your friend on that.
Well, this is a city, and we can make our own rules. So I don't need to necessarily reach out. I have worked with the county. I get the weed wrenches.
On contrary, the county manages the shorelines of all the significance of every river in the county, regardless of jurisdiction.
I'm talking about what I see in our town outside of
that. Oh, I see.
That's growing. So.
So I think you might get some resistance to trying to enforce private property from the city, maybe in public lands, sure. We could talk further about that.
I have a good case, and trying to research what the total value was lost in the East Washington fires that are related to Scotch. Mm,
yeah.
And given our highly flammable summers, why I'm a dry summer being mm-hmm. a highly flammable yeah. plant makes it a good time to propose.
You have a good point there.
So, mm-hmm. I'm done. I'll entertain
I want to go back to what I was talking about. One more item that's an important element. While looking at the site, a neighbor came out, his name was John, lived right next to the site, and he was a very valuable guy with information.
Which site?
The hotel site. Very knowledgeable, probably one of the community leaders, and a very credible guy. And the one thing that I left after talking to him was that he's not getting any straight communication with the city on any of this stuff. And I don't know why we're cross-talking each other, but he doesn't have any extra other than he's a homeowner that's going to be subjected to that hotel, and he's worried about the flooding issue, and he'd like to know that when he has a community meeting with the city, that the city has given them information with respect and good information. They don't think they're getting it.
Is there a notice board so you can sign up for any updates?
For
any projects, yeah, you can request to be on notice of record, and if you're within 300 feet, you're automatically.
Right. But as for daily updates,
they've actually had a meeting. He's, mm-hmm. I don't have total recall, but I do remember very clearly that our new engineer went out, had a group meeting, but they just didn't feel like they were getting as much information as they were seeking. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to, I'm not taking sides, I'm a messenger here.
Right.
That they seem to be very concerned that they're not getting anywhere. They can clearly see the project's in trouble, and they don't know what's going on. That's all I'm saying.
Right, so the city needs to make sure that we're delivering a clear message to them.
Yeah, and listen to them.
I agree.
They're worried about getting more flooding than they deserve. Yeah.
That's a good point.
We passed out the year-to-date activity report at the last meeting. I don't have a copy of it, but we have it here if you wanted to. I can't read that. But if you wanted to come look at it before you go, or we could email it or drop it.
Yeah, I was noticing it was always good when I got the mail to go, okay, now absorb where we are. And
so we did hand it out at the last meeting. We're processing a lot. We had one hearing yesterday, one next week, and one a couple weeks ago, three weeks or so ago. For preliminary plats. So we're in that busy time for those. They'll go to engineering. And as far as new things in, John Day's plat came in, which is...
I can email you this.
That was 30 units.
John Day, Cedar Falls South is 30.
Yep.
Cottages is under review. What else is going on?
I can just talk about the others to him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just making sure. Make sure, hopefully, we can see it.
Yep, we passed it out hard copies at the last meeting because it wasn't ready for the packet.
So, on those permits, do you see... let me try to ask this question the right way. So, we've got sewer issues, capacity issues. We seem to be solving them by hauling stuff away. Is that the plan until some future fix? Or, in other words, are we out of capacity now? With the permits that are coming in?
We're not out of capacity now. For some reason, that's not clear to me. But total number of new single family, cottage, including hotel, flats, everything, if built, is about 800 units in the pipeline. Again, those aren't all the way through review, so they could fall away. But...
That's lots
you're
talking about. That's lots, not
units.
Units
or rooms
or
So if all those were to happen, what this is what Public Works is looking into further as far as the major improvements that would be needed. What we understand is if all 800 were to go through, our plant is at capacity at that point. We can't continue to take in more. More projects in the pipeline.
Why are we hauling stuff off right now then?
Well, we've made the fixes necessary to keep to fix the problems that we had, and so we're good for now. But anticipating development, future projects that we're just doing PARs now, pre-applications now for, there's going to be major improvements needed, and so that's what they're working on, coming up with what that's going to be and when. It's probably major plant update.
And we're hauling stuff off because the dryer that they're using is an outdated piece of equipment that is actually as expensive, if not more, to dry and process it as it is to haul it off.
And
so it's actually a cost saving.
And you always have some solid product in the process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they are working on it. Don DeBerg has been pretty much full-time, and that's what he's been working on, is the long-term solution, because we don't want to have any sort of stop in our ability to grow and issue permits. And
it'd be really interesting if we got to annex a nice golf course and take 10 acres of that and make a nice pond of reclaimed water, that's what I'm saying. On that note, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, motion by Jim, second by Dick, and it is 9:16:17. We are adjourned. Thank you all. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Jamie, what's, where are we